Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, July 12th, 2012. Well, tonight's guest had her first work published in her grade school yearbook. It was a letter she wrote from the viewpoint of John F. Kennedy in heaven, just after his assassination. Her most recent work and her first novel, titled The Third Grace, recently won the Grace Irwin Award, a $5,000 award, which is Canada's largest literary award for writers who are Christian. Deb Elkink is on the phone with us from her Alberta home, and we'll be talking to her in a few moments about her writing and her win. But before we begin our conversation with Deb, let's take a listen to My Hope is in Your Mercy, from Music from St. Benedict's Table, a collection of songs from the Winnipeg-based ministry which follows the liturgy of the Eucharist.
Lord, my hope is in your mercy. Change my heart, set me free. Lord, my hope is in your mercy. Change my heart, set me free. Lord, my hope is in your mercy. Change my heart, set me free. Lord, my hope is in your mercy. Change my heart, set me free. You who walk upon the water, you who make the blind ones see, and in the mystery of mercy, we become what we're to be. Lord, my hope.
And now to our interview with Deb Elkin. Good evening, Deb.
Hello, Robert. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the beginning. What went through your mind when you first saw that letter from JFK in the school yearbook?
It was a poem. And when I think about it now, and I could quote it to you, and I won't. A poor audience would not like to hear that that literature. But I think it was the first time that I'd ever really realized the scope of world events and politics. Being 9 years old, I was just sort of excited that I could put words on paper, and my teacher helped me with it. So I can't. It was sort of co-written.
Now, how did that sort of that type of beginning, you know, an inauspicious beginning, lead to, you know, what's now an award-winning writing career? Take us through how you got to where you are now.
Well, I have to say that I probably started. Words were important to me from a very early age. I talked before I walked, and in grammatically correct sentences. And, you know, I wasn't a great reader when I was a child. I was a talker. But my dad was an incredible storyteller, and my mom is an artist. And so there's a sort of a verbal and visual aspect to the way I approach words and writing. So when I, you know, worked my way up in school, I got all sorts of positive feedback from my teachers, and every time I did a book review or wrote something creative, I got great grades for it, and that was very confirming and validating for me. So as I went on, I remember sitting at my mom's feet as she was painting on her canvas one day when I was in ninth grade, just about to go into ninth grade, trying to figure out what stream of studies I should go into. Should I be a doctor or a writer? And that's when I made a decision. Well, I'm going to go down this more artistic avenue, which ended up taking me to a university down in the States. It's a university now. It was a college then, down in Minnesota. And I learned to write technically various things in a communications degree that I did under a really wonderful scholarly teacher, and I started to do some freelancing, and I published, you know, freelanced articles for a while, but, you know, ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be a novelist, to be a novelist. I wanted that to be my definition. So I had a plan from way back then and learned that I had to pay my dues and write query letters and connect in that way with magazine audiences. And then I ended up, my life took a dramatic turn when I got married and ended up on a cattle ranch and then started homeschooling our kids. And it sort of put my writing on the back burner as I was soaking in some other aspects of living. Then when I went and did a master's degree at the a Master of Arts at the end of my homeschooling with my kids, which was would have been at in 99 I started, 1999, that's when I felt that my writing really got kick-started again. And I had a and then I got a background in research and felt some, and worked for a while doing editing, which I continue to do, academic editing, and some biblical editing that I do. And so that sort of set the stage. Now I felt, after working on that for a while and working as well as a co-editor on a national, a quarterly in-house sort of magazine, I felt, now I'm ready. Now I'm going to put down the other things and I'm going to pick up my dream to be a novelist. So that's how it started.
Well, looking back and all through those years and that, who have been your influences as a writer?
Of course, my parents, mm-hmm. school teachers, particularly this Elvira Mickelson, who's died now, down at Bethel College, and her husband was a theologian. I never met him, but she influenced me greatly. Then when I went to... I'm leaping forward now. Then I went when I went and did my my thesis work, my master's work. Dr. Ruth Hindmarsh was an incredible influence mm-hmm. in my writing, and along all through this time, probably from my early 20s forward, I've been influenced by a biblical expositor who I still am friends with and I work with on a sort of a voluntary basis. And he continues to guide my biblical thinking. And so those, I would say, would be incredibly influential in my life. As far as the living aspect, like what gives me what's really shaped my life, I think that I'd have to say, living on a cattle ranch in the prairies of Saskatchewan for 20 years was amazingly influential in shaping and changing my character.
Well, looking at it, you mentioned Dr. Hindmarsh, Bruce Hindmarsh, and one of the things I found, it was in your bio online, is a quote where you said that he guided your understanding of what makes literature truly Christian. Mm-hmm. How did that shape what you've done now as a novelist?
I believe that message is more important than method. It's a dangerous position to be in mm-hmm. writing fiction because fiction depends on capturing the imagination of the reader. But which I love doing. I mean, I just live for it. But the message underneath is more important, and I think the reason I think that what I believe about Christian literature is that the message underneath has to be extremely sound in order for the method to be effectual. And so there are many, many methods of writing, of course, many mm-hmm. styles, many approaches to, in fact, not just writing, but many approaches to presenting the gospel, presenting the love of Christ, and expressing and explaining a bit here and there of who God is. But for me, the most important thing is that I'd be grounded biblically and out of the well of a biblical understanding and my own theology, I can then go ahead and express it in my chosen method.
Well, I want to pick up on that in a minute, and what we need to do is take a quick break. And when we do, we'll come back and be with our guest, Deb Elkink, and we'll talk about her novel, The Third Grace. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Out of the root of the Jesse tree, I'm going to set my people free. Into their desert and into their night, I'm going to send my sweet, pure light, and there'll be peace, joy, hope, and love. There will be peace, joy, hope, and love. There will be peace, joy, hope, and love. There will be peace, joy, hope, and love.
Welcome back to Art Connection. You've been listening to Jesse Tree from the beautiful Mercy CD by St. Benedict's Table. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Deb Elkink. Deb, one of the things you were talking about before we went to break was the message undergirding and being more important than the method. And I find that seems to be contradictory from what I've heard over the last few years, where people are saying that story needs to be more important than message in writing. Are the two contradictory, what you're saying?
Yes. I think they are. Okay. I think what I'm saying is not what I've been hearing. And I absolutely respect whatever approach people want to take. We as writers, we have that freedom, and individually we're able to explore in our style whatever it is that we choose to explore. But I believe that the message is so foundational to us, and that in my understanding, I've been charged to make the message of utmost importance. When we look at culture, when we look at the people around us, the dear souls that we live amongst, and yearn for them to understand, what is it that we're yearning for them to understand? And I think that if I have an understanding in my own heart, and I've developed as a Christian and have been maturing as a Christian, really getting what the important point is, and there is a point, there is a black and white point, then if I get that, then I'll be able to go ahead and express it. But expression for me is not the most important thing. It's not the starting place. Expression is not the starting place. That's a big thing for me to have learned, because I'm a talker. So self-centered in many ways, that so self-aware of how I feel and what I want to say, and how I want to express myself. It's a mark of maturity for me, of maturing for me, that I'm starting to get that it's not about me, it's not about my method. It's about who God is and what it is that He wants to say. And I don't for a moment believe that I have anything inspired, that my words are inspired in any way. I don't give that kind of value to my expression of the story. God will use what He'll use, but it's His story that's central.
Mm-hmm. And that does come through in the third grace as you're reading, but also there's a really good story behind all of that. Just the characters that you've developed and the plot and the whole thing that pulls through. Where did the whole idea for the third grace come from?
Well, I went to the Louvre in Paris, the first time I ever went to Europe, in 1989. And when I stood before a carving, a marble statue grouping called the Three Graces, it dawned on me what a perfect icon that would be for a novel.
And that becomes one of the main symbols with throughout the novel all the way through.
Yes.
Yeah, one of the things that I was reading it and as I was reading through the novel, it became obvious there was this tremendous amount of research that was in there, because you're getting into Greek mythology, you're getting into elements of Greek mythology that I'd never heard of before. And how long did it take to research the Third Grace? And how long did it take after that to actually put the whole thing together and write it?
This is my first novel, and I'm I'm learning, and I have much to learn about the process of novel writing. It was funny with this novel. I wrote it, and it was only 60,000 words, so it's not the length of a full-length contemporary women's novel. So I did not at that point, I had not at that point used, you know, a lot of research on the Greek mythology part. And it was after that, after I'd sort of written the whole framework of the story, that I went back and said, okay, we need some more in here. And so I added a layer of Greek mythology. So it's not that I studied the Greek mythology much before I started the novel. So I was doing the studying, the research of it, while I was in that rewrite, and that rewrite took me about 6 months. So the extra 40,000 words or so that I put in there, which was mostly Greek mythology. So probably about 6 months, but I was researching it along the way and adding things in.
It just sounds like what I've done with the novel I'm working on. I wrote as a journalist, and I did the National Novel Writers Month, and I ended up with my first draft was like 30,000 words.
Yes, wow.
And now I've got to go back and add layers of material on there, so I can understand what you're saying. One of the things that I found fascinating was, as I was reading your bio, I was finding elements of your life that were fitting into the book. The fact that you like sewing, you even sewed costumes for a local theater, a local costume shop. This is part of your main character. How do you pronounce her name, please?
Yes, and isn't that unfortunate? I won't be writing another novel with a character with an odd name. I've learned that. Her name is Aglaia.
Okay. I was close.
Yeah, well, pretty good. I did write near the beginning, it rhymes with Alpeia.
Yes, I saw that, but I was still trying to figure it out. Anyway,
I don't speak Greek, so I might have it all wrong, but that's what I find as a pronunciation expressed on, online.
How much of yourself is in Aglaia?
Well, lots. But there's lots of me in Eb, mm-hmm. Lou, in Naomi. There's a lot of me throughout it. I would not be synonymous with Aglaia. Although, Robert, I fell madly in love when I was 17.
Uh-huh.
I did. With a French-Canadian boy.
Well, talking about that, those are some issues. Like, you tackle the whole issues of intimacy, sexuality, coming of age. Those are issues that Christians tend to avoid and actually would suggest that we shouldn't be writing about. Have you had any reaction to some of the elements that you've had in there?
Yes, I have had some reaction.
And how have you handled them?
Well, the first strong reaction I had, it threw me for a bit of a loop, and I spoke to my publisher about it, I spoke to my publisher about it and said, give me a minute and let me see if I can't, clean this up a little. And then I sat back and thought about it and said, wait a minute. There's nothing, I don't disagree with anything I've written. I'm not ashamed of it.
Mm-hmm.
And sexuality is a part of our very personhood. And so I went back to the critic, and it just explained that I couldn't really change it and that I didn't want to change it. And so some other people, I'm sensitive to. The reason that I responded or reacted to the first critic was, my whole purpose in writing this is to draw attention through sensual writing to a greater underlying purpose. Well, I just have to take a break. I have to take a detour here. John Calvin said long ago, centuries ago, that all of nature points to Scripture, and all of Scripture points to the person of Jesus Christ. And so I looked at that and I thought, I can get this. And so I put myself into that formula and said, okay, as a fiction writer, I'm going to take the place I'm going to present nature, but it won't be necessarily the trees and the grass and the sky. I will present the human condition in emotions and senses as well as I'm able, and see if that doesn't draw the eye of the reader, then point to Scripture. So I looked at what I had written under these criticisms and said, no, but it's true. That's how women feel. This is what happens to women, girls and women. This is what happens.
And there's it adds a sense of realism to all of this as well. Mm. So what I need to do is we're running on here. I need to take one final break, and after we finish our finish the break, we'll finish our conversation with writer Deb Elkink. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Again and again and again, to this table we come. Once a people estranged, now is one in your name. In your mercy and grace, forgiven of all we've confessed. By your body and blood, one last thing we request. To you we pray, Jesus, feed us, Jesus, feed us, Jesus, with your healing love. Again and again and again, to this table we come. Once a people estranged, now is one in your name, in your mercy.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Jesus Feed Us, music from St. Benedict's Table. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Deb Elkink. Deb, I'm going to switch gears here a little bit, and I want to talk about the Canadian Christian Writing Awards. I sat behind you at the gala, and when they started reading an excerpt from The Third Grace to announce who the winner for the Grace Irwin Award was, there was this whole body of emotion that was going through you. You were going from "I can't believe I won" to "I can't believe I won." Yeah, it was just this spectrum of words. What was going through your mind at that point?
Shock, of course.
Yeah.
Just before this, I had understood that I got a runner-up status, Award of Merit, which is a wonderful thing in my particular category. And so I was a little disappointed, but cheered on by that, you know, having a runner-up status in my smaller category. So I sat back and relaxed, crossed my legs, and knew that the tension was over. And so when my name came up as one of the finalists, my first thought was, this is ridiculous. Look, this is ridiculous. I can't believe this. I didn't even know that I was in. I never even paid attention to who the judges were. I didn't know anything about the Grace Irwin Award at that moment. I knew that it had nothing to do with me. And so it was a stunned shock. And then an excitement started setting in, and somebody that sat in front of me was laughing about it later and said, you sounded like you were having a baby back there, puffing and wheezing and grunting. And I thought that was hilarious. And when they announced that it was my book by reading a passage of it, my first thought was, that's not the excerpt I sent in. They found a better excerpt. And I could barely contain my absolute delight. Mm-hmm. I didn't contain my delight. I whooped.
You ran up to the podium.
I ran, you know, kindly, and I believe it was you that wrote that I skipped up the aisle. I didn't skip. I ran dead flat out, and I had 4.5-inch Jessica Simpson heels on, and I jumped into the air and whooped like I was rounding up cattle, which there weren't any cows around at that moment, but they would have been totally frightened, properly frightened by me, had they heard me. So I was very happy, and I was just so surprised and overjoyed.
So have you recovered from the shock?
You know, I'm still coming down a little bit from it.
So what does it mean? What this is one of the most prestigious awards that there is in Canada for writers who are Christian. Have you sort of given a thought as to what that actually means for you?
Yes. First of all, it's not one of the most. I mean, it certainly is one of the most, but also it's the largest ever monetary literary prize given to Canadian writers who are Christian. And it's not so much the money. The money is wonderful. It's very helpful. But it's the validation, again, that word validation that comes with this. My peer group said, this is great. We like this. This is valid. And we know, and the judge told me later, there were amongst all the finalists, there were so many they could have just pulled and given that award to. So I understand that this isn't the most, the most beautifully written book, the perfect book. They saw value in it. They gave validation to it, and I'm glad for that. And they chose me because they knew I needed that development. So I'll be using that prize. I'm using that cash prize for a computer upgrade, for development in my craft and my skills by going to workshops and so on, and some for being able to do a bit of getting to places where I'll be doing interviews and so on.
Right.
And so I'm really thrilled with it.
Great. Well, looking at the time, we're quickly running out. Have you got another project on the go?
Absolutely, I do. Don't have a title yet, but it's going to be, I'm going to say it on your show, a hidden version of, a veiled version of Hebrews, the book of Hebrews.
Okay. Now, where can people get more information about you and your works?
Come to my website, debelkink.com.
And that's E-L-K-I-N-K.
Right.
Okay. Deb, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Robert.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection today. Thank you to my guest, Deb Elking. And be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries. That's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca. Or follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.